Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, Northbank Stacks and Jacks, I'm Tim Out. Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 69. This is where we're down in the morning, and then we creep back during the day as we have mutual fund buying in the afternoon still as people continue to buy the market relentlessly. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's what happened. It's becoming a habit, not necessarily an investment. It has been for a while, which is really a good thing. People should invest, but every once in a while, I think we can get extended by just doing that. So we have Mr. Kevin.
Good morning. Yes, you do.
How are you?
I'm doing okay this morning.
So 2 weeks from today, are we going to wake up with a president?
I actually think we will.
You think so?
I think they will have called enough states to have a decision. I mean, it's really, watch Pennsylvania. Whoever wins Pennsylvania is probably going to win the presidency.
Yeah, it was, I've been looking at the, I had a conversation yesterday with Kenny, and Kenny was talking about the bookies or doing this and that and so forth, and so of course I went through, I keep looking at the Brexit situation and how everybody was so wrong, and it's interesting. I mean, you would think as a trader, of course, you believe in the markets, right? But the bookies would be right. Well, the bookies are stone cold wrong in the Brexit. And so now the question is, who are the bookies? Now, I know you know this, but I wonder if the listeners, when you say the Bears were 7.5-point favorites and they got their ass kicked, the bookies were wrong. The bookies weren't wrong. The people who were betting on the game were wrong. It's somewhat like a pari-mutuel system. I mean, if those who don't know what that is, and they never went to a racetrack, it's real simple. Dumb people bet against each other. You go out there, and if Kevin O'Neill is big swinging, whatever, big swinging Arnold Palmer, as Trump would say, walks out to and puts $10,000 down on Andrew in the fifth, there's something called a win pool where everybody bets on every horse and the money goes in the win pool. And depending on how many tickets there are, that's what the payout is. So whatever the amount of money in there, 85% of the money goes to the winning person. So if somebody bets a boatload on one horse, that's going to change the odds. So the Brexit, they actually were interviewing some dude, this article from a few years ago. He goes, we didn't set the rates. That's where the money came in. He goes, and everybody was...
Tom, does that... And I'm asking because I don't know. Does that change the odds, or does that just change the payout, or is there any difference?
It actually can change the odds. Now, I don't know how it works now, Kevin, with all the online and the size of these places, but I used to go to Vegas, like, not necessarily during Super Bowl week, but certainly during playoff week, and it wouldn't be unusual to get there on a Thursday and say the Bears are 4-point favorites, and all of a sudden everybody's betting the Bears, where they would be 5-point favorites by Saturday. It would move, but now
I understand. But we're not talking about a point spread here. We're talking about a binary choice of who's going to win.
Well, it's sort of the same thing.
It really isn't, because the point spreads are set to try to draw money evenly on each side, so that the sports book in Las Vegas or or the bookie can just take the vigorish and make money. And so, you know, that's a little bit different, and that's why it moves, is when a lot of money comes in on one side or the other, they move it to try to draw some of the money back to the
Trump's a favorite.
And I'm thinking in horse racing, they're not trying to move where the money goes, they're manipulating the payout. So if all the money goes on Secretariat, well, then you're not going to make very much money on the payout on Secretariat. You might make $1.10 for your dollar or something like that. But or $1.05 for your dollar or something like that, but they aren't trying to manipulate how many people do or do not bet on Secretariat.
If everybody starts betting on Trump, the payout for Trump goes down, which is like it's like the money line.
Totally agree.
It's like the money line in a baseball versus the points.
There's not somebody out there saying, well, you know, Trump's going to get this many electoral votes, and so people vote over or under on the number of electoral votes, just like they would on the point spread. That's not what they're doing for the betting markets, as far as I know. They're just saying who's going to win binary. So it's going to be more like the horse race than it is going to be like the sports book betting on a football game.
But it's not like the
they're not trying to draw money to one side or the other. No. They're just saying place your bet.
Yeah, what happened during the Brexit is because all the polls said for sure that they were going to stay. So the people betting bet on it staying. So one followed the other. And then, if you look at the polls now, it comes down to are the polls reaching everybody who's going to vote? And in Britain, the screw up they made was evidently, Kevin, and I don't know the answer to this, you might know better than me. There were people that hadn't voted in years that came out to vote for this thing, which the explanation has to be that people in Britain must stay in their houses or domiciles like a real long time. I mean, here it could happen. I mean, I've been in my place for 20 years. I guess I could not have voted in the last 18 years, and all of a sudden this election's a big deal, and I run down the block and vote. But seems to me people here kind of move more often than that. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but somehow or another, there were a lot of people who hadn't voted in a long time. And when you say the poll says likely voters, okay, who the hell's a likely voter? Obviously, those people weren't likely voters. They weren't counted, and they upset the whole thing. So now when you talk about polls, who exactly are you getting to on the likely voter? I mean, I voted every time, so I'm getting nothing but stuff on my phone. I haven't answered any of them. Okay, so I'm a likely voter, yeah. But how do we make sure we reach? The more you go random, the more you got to make sure you reach the right person. So you can't just, if I don't answer it, you can't just go to Andrew because he's in the same office on the same day. You can't do that. So you wonder. I mean, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the polls are way off either side. I can't tell you which side, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if everything's off, Kevin. I really can't.
Well, what did I tell you last time we were together? I said that, you know, the polls that have the most value are the what the campaign people are getting from their pollsters, because they pay a lot of money for it, and they pay a lot of money for them to be very specific and to slice and dice by groups in a very specific way. And so you can tell based on what the campaign is emphasizing, you can tell how they're doing. As an example, the Harris campaign has to be genuinely concerned about the number of African Americans who will be voting for Trump, which is why they have Obama out scolding them, and why they have all kinds of people lined up at their campaign events, and the announcements, the whole media blitz around that they're trying to do, because they are concerned about getting enough their usual percentage of African American votes. That has been as high as like 94% to 95%, and it's probably been as low as 89%. If it's 80 or lower, they're in big trouble.
Well, they
and they're acting like they're in big trouble.
But there was a few polls out, or a few studies out, or a few articles out, saying that some African-American males are going to vote for Trump. Okay, now, are they responding to those stories, or do they have, are they confirming their own count, or are they just running around from what, from both sides and what they hear from the other side?
They're responding to their internal polling.
So who does that?
They hire for their campaigns.
All right, so you're acting like these are special omniscient people. How the hell do they poll different than the other guys?
I don't know, because I'm not a pollster. I need to get a pollster on here.
Well,
I probably wouldn't get that until after the election, but that would probably be an interesting topic, an interesting guess.
You
are asking a good question. I'm not denying that. If you go back to Brexit, they were also focused on London. You told the story yesterday.
Yeah.
They were also focused on London, and London wasn't the rest of the country. It's very much the same. In a lot of the United States. You get the people in the media center in New York, and you get the people in D.C., and their experience of everything is completely different. First of all, the media people are all insulated and living the high-end life, whether they, go to the Hamptons on the weekends and have, really expensive places to live in the city. That's what your media anchors and a lot of the pundits and so on that they have on, that's their life, and that's not the same as the average New York person. And my God, Washington D.C., with the size of government, they don't experience a recession ever, because so many government employees are just, long-term employed, no problem. They get paid well, and they live a different life, so they have no concept of what the rest of the country is thinking, which is why you can't listen to the pundits when you're trying to get a feeling for the election. You just can't do it. But on the other hand, they do pay people to get out in Michigan and find out what's going on. They do pay people to, poll very specifically in Southeast Michigan, where there's a high Middle Eastern population, and to try and find out just how much trouble they're in with that, with that particular group, because if Michigan's a closed vote, that could swing it one way or the other. So this is what they pay people to do. That's what they're looking at. That's not what you and I are seeing on the nightly news.
I'm having trouble here saying things that aren't sounding weird this morning. Maybe that's every morning, Kevin, but if I can't figure out in a logical way how somebody does what they're doing, I mean, we had Bill Moriarty on Thursday, and talked about highway, what happens when a highway gets washed out or a bridge. He says these people are very good at what they do. They go out, they assess the damage, they assess, can they get part of it open? Is there a workaround? Is there some place that they can go? Is there another road? And they assess it, and they immediately start trying to shore up the stuff they can short term while planning the long stuff. There's a process to it, okay? So once he was done talking, I'm not an engineer, you're not an engineer, but at least if we hired one and we could figure out whether the guy knew what the hell he was doing or not, there's a process to it. Now, I never did any polling. I was not, your bro, as you recall, was our statistical genius. I was never good at statistics. I'm sitting there going, okay, how exactly would I start? And I've heard everybody say these guys are professional pollsters. They do this, they do that. And I'm sure they're good at what they do. But I'm sitting there going, how does it work? I mean, and how do you do a random sample? And the one I read 2 weeks ago, a random sample of 1,000 people nationwide. And I'm sitting there, whoa. How in God's name to even begin to do that? How many people voted, Kevin? 120 million? I don't even know. 100 some million? Okay, do we have everybody's name from nationwide, and we have a random number table? We're going to take 100 people, and we went out and found it was 1,000 people. Every single one of those people, without being at the guy or lady next door down the block, I find that beyond incredible. I just don't see how it could even work, especially when nobody answers the phone. And if people call your cell phone, you're usually at work or something, and you're outraged, and you slam the thing down. I have no idea what that process is, and until I do, it just doesn't register with me. Just saying.
Yeah, I understand, Tom.
Now, you know, in a place like Wisconsin, for instance, I think you could probably go to. Oh, by the way, did you you don't listen to BBM when I'm driving around? Listen to BBM. Did you know, being a Wisconsin person, that one county in Wisconsin has votes? I mean, there's a lot of counties that are all red, all blue, right? Matter of fact, most of them are. There's one county that is not. Can you name it?
Ask that question one more time.
Which county in Wisconsin is not all red, all blue, and it tends to go with the winner every single time?
Oh, I don't know. How about Racine County, just for a wild-ass guess?
No, Door County, for some reason.
Oh, okay.
And the funny part is, they did it. This was a long skit.
For listeners who don't know, Door County, if you looked at Wisconsin's, you know, the map of Wisconsin, there's a thumb. You know, it's like a left hand with a thumb. The thumb is Door County.
It separates Lake Michigan and Green Bay. It's a peninsula between the two.
Yep.
Well, so get a load of this. Whoever did the study, and once in a while, news radio, I don't know who did it, but they must have bought it from somebody. It was really fast, Kevin. Some guy went up there. I think might have been a guy and a lady. It was two of them. They were doing interviews. And the thing is dead end. They're 50-50. Every time, they like the last six elections, they picked the winner. So they went to from PTA meetings to bars to, you know, breakfast joints, whatever you want, breakfast joint, talking about Council Southside. And they said, do you know any individual person that in the last six elections has called the winner every time? Not one person can name one person that was right every time. One lady she goes, well, it was five out of six. The guy goes, that doesn't count. But it is interesting. They thought, they were interviewing these people. They were sounded like the nicest people you ever met, Kevin. Every one of them said, no, we just the way it ends up. But she goes, yeah, the Cook County or the Door County is 6-6. She goes, I'm 3-6. The other guy goes, well, I'm 2-6. So it was so weird. It wasn't like, you know, the first 10 people they interviewed said, oh, yeah, but I've been right all the last six times. So if you add that up, obviously the county was right. But nobody could name a person that was right in the last six presidential elections. And yet, evidently the county is. Isn't that weird?
That is weird. So easy call. Very, very simple call. Let's just go to Door County and poll.
Now you've got the question of what has changed? What could possibly change in a Michigan, in a Wisconsin? I don't know that much about Pennsylvania, but in Wisconsin generally, you got Door County voting, you know, whatever way is the winner by a little bit. Most counties, I think, are going to be red. And then you've got Madison, where the University of Wisconsin is. You've got other little universities around that maybe aren't so little. You've got Milwaukee, which typically are blue. Now, if, you know, you have the, and I don't know how big a phenomenon it is, but one of my Quora guys, one of the guys who writes for Quora, said there's been 367,000 registrations to vote in the last, I don't know, 6, 8 months, 9 months or something. And traditionally, anybody who registered to vote in a presidential year, like 80 or 85% of those vote. Which, I guess, if you're going to go out and register, you're probably going to vote, right? That would seem logical.
Yeah, traditionally that's true. I would wonder if a lot of the voter registration drives that they do, you know, like nowadays they go, the parties will go set up shop at other events, and they have a table and say, come on, come over here, register to vote, and people will do it. So they're not necessarily going out of their way like they would have over.
You mean it's? You mean it's
at
too
one point in time.
It's too easy.
So maybe yeah, it's that's, yeah, because it's that's too fair. Easy. So maybe instead of 85, it's really 75. I don't know the answer.
But I, as a pollster, now I got a real problem. How do I figure out A, if they're going to show, and V, how they're going to vote when they never voted before? I mean, that's essentially what happened in the Brexit. Although they hadn't just registered, they'd been dead forever, which is kind of different, but I guess sort of the same thing. So I mean, how do you determine? It's hard enough as it is, to figure out people that have voted all the time, like me, to get me to answer, assuming you want me to. And people you don't even have no idea. I mean, is there such a thing as the Taylor Swift phenomenon? I'm guessing not that much, but boy, in some of these states, if it's 20,000 people, it's a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, if it's 20,000 and it falls substantially one side or the other, it's a lot, yeah, because a lot of them are going to be decided by 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 votes.
Yeah, I mean, in Wisconsin, I would be, if I'm on the Trump side, and all of a sudden the registrations, say, at the University of Wisconsin last year were everybody who's 18 is everybody's a lot. If all of a sudden you see a lot of people registering more than last time at age 18, and you get a bump in that area, I'm concerned. I don't know what I can do about it necessarily. Plus, they might be guys.
Well, there isn't much you can do about it. But yeah, if like a Dane County is what you're talking about. And if Dane County sees a surge in registrations, then you're going to be concerned. So, you know, I go back to what I said earlier. It is watch the campaigns, watch what they're doing, where their focus is for their commercials, all of that. Watch that, because that's going to tell you what they think is needs work.
Yeah, and the only disagreement we're sort of having here is I think that whoever is doing the polls, it's a really tough job. And it just like the thing I got from reading about the Brexit, Kevin, is that somebody somewhere set the poll momentum, whether they were good pollsters, crummy pollsters, just looking at the wrong people, somebody set the whole momentum going. This is what people are thinking. Everybody believed them to the fact that the people were now gambling on it. To the people were slugging down their scotch in London, chortling how they were going to stay. I mean, it gained its own momentum. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if somebody comes up with five people come up with really crappy polls, maybe they're wrong on one side or the other. Or it wouldn't surprise me. In other words, if somebody said, "Gee, every African American is now going to vote for Trump," it wouldn't surprise me that the Harris campaign started chasing down that road. Now, whether they confirm it first or not, I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be kind of hard to.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if they're chasing down that road, they're paying the good pollsters work for the campaigns. The rest of them work for NBC News or Fox News or whoever. And it's not that they're bad at what they do; they're just not. They're not so granular in what they do. They're not doing the same. Now you can, if you see these polls published and they say, well, Trump's up 2 points or whatever, 2 points in the state. What you really have to do is you have to go in and read the whole document, because
right.
they will get into some detail there, and it will, it will have some substance to it. So I'm not completely dismissing what they do, but what I am saying is that they spend a whole lot more money and they pay for some very specific types of polling from the campaigns, and what they're seeing, whether maybe they're all wrong, maybe they're completely wrong about what they're seeing, but they're not reacting to the NBC poll, or they're not reacting to the Fox News poll or the Wall Street Journal poll. They're reacting to what their internal pollsters are telling them.
I think they probably are more than we think they are. But here's the problem. I mean, if I'm Harris, and I've traditionally had 94% of black males, hey, the only way to go is down, right? You can't really go up. I mean, if anybody changes, it's gonna be a guinea, right?
Well, yeah, and the common theme that they're getting, they're not just getting from. From blacks, but they're also getting this from Hispanics. The real common theme is, hey, these people are around every election year to tell us how many wonderful things they're going to do for us, and then we don't see them again for 4 more years. And I think that that little problem has it started rumbling a few years back, but I think that's become a really big problem for the Democrats in general.
Well, they have a little bit of a Jimmy Carter problem. In the sense that there's a lot of people that I have talked to that are convinced the inflation is on Biden's watch, when in fact it's 80% on Trump's watch. Just like you know, the...
I'm not willing to concede 80, but I'm willing to concede a fair chunk of it, yeah.
Well, 80% of the money supply growth was in Trump's wedge. Now, I'm just saying Biden wouldn't have done the same thing.
No, but they piled on.
The problem is that
they piled on, and
a little bit.
They pushed more than a little. A lot of the stuff that they pushed hasn't even begun to kick in yet.
Which
we're seeing, and that was part of Carl's discussion.
Well, one has 80% of the money supply growth happened there. But I'm saying there are people now. If you walked around and did an interview, and that's the beauty of the big lie, Kevin. I mean, if you walk around right now, people say, who caused the inflation and the early inflation? The answer is Carter. And I'd go, wait a minute. You forget Nixon's waste price controls? Why? What were those? I mean, once it gets in the vernacular, it's there. You can't move it. But anyway, it's been two presidential 4-year slams that have caused it. Now, did this guy do what I wanted him to do to fix it? God, no. And he increased it a little more when he came in, but basically 80% of it was under Trump.
You keep saying a little more, but I think the combination of the American Rescue Act, the infrastructure bill, and the Inflation Reduction Act is more than a little more.
None of that stuff, depending on how it's supplied, depending on how you finance it, none of that stuff is inflationary unless you print money to do it. And if you look back at, where am I going here? If I go back 10 years, we started in February 20, Trump's watch. By the time he left, we were 15-4 in the money supply. So he leaves in January, what, of 21?
Yeah.
So he leaves January 21. We are already up to 19-5. All right, so that's $4 trillion, and the current guy brought it to $21 trillion. So it's roughly 80%, 75% of it was Trump, and then it started to come down pretty dramatically under Biden, and now it's back up. But it's definitely roughly the same as when Trump left. It was 19-3, and now it's 21-2. So he's up 2. Trump was up 6. So whatever that percentage is. But it was, you know, but he's not done the right stuff. I agree with you. But now the question, Kevin, and we got to go to break here. But
and he's got a problem because in the most recently completed fiscal year is the first time the tax receipts have been down in like 12 years.
I'm not so sure. I'll check that on the break. I'm not so sure about that. I think
federal tax revenue started. Let's see. Where's my tax revenue table here? So the last time it was down.
Let's go to break and pull it up. S&P futures down 13. NASDAQ futures down 68. They were down for most of the year, but I thought they snuck back up. But I guess what I'm saying, Kevin, is that now I really don't. I'm not going to vote. I'm going to vote for either one of them. I might vote for you. I don't know. Out of the group, Russell doesn't want me to vote for him. I can always vote for Flanagan. I'll never find him.
Take a break.
We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. I'm trying to find this one. There we go. Carl sent it to us, a monthly Treasury statement. We'll worry about that in a second. S&P futures are down 15. Now I got to get my other page back up here. Kevin, you got me with about 100 pages up here. I blame you. Of course, I always blame you. What the hell? It's ranked NFL teams. That's not what we're talking about. By the way, did you catch the thing about the tickets yesterday? Ticket prices? We got to talk about that for a second. The football teams in the NFL, their inflation rates and how the teams that started out real expensive weren't able to raise their rates as much as some of the other ones. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, S&P futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 72. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got McDonald's down $21. That's almost a 7% move. That's a big news item because they just somehow or another, they think in Nebraska and In Colorado, people are getting sick with eating quarter pounders. That's not good. Over in Europe, we've got the Coca-Cola came out with earnings. I've got Coke is trading. Where the hell is Coke trading? I don't know. I'll find it in a second. But they actually they raised prices enough that even though their volume is down, the revenue is up. We're seeing a lot of that. I mean, people do have wouldn't exactly call it price fixing or whatever Elizabeth Warren's doing, but whenever you have people that are in concentrated industries, to not expect that is pretty ignorant, but maybe we don't. Anyway, the DAX down 27.1%, FTSE down 30.3%, CAC around down 42.6%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 307, it's 0.8%, Hang Seng up 291, 1.2%, 20,760, Shanghai up 16.5%. Yesterday in the U.S., Dow was down 6, S&P down 2, NASDAQ up 33. Again, we were down most of the day. We keep creeping back on the closes. There appears to still be a lot of mutual fund buying. This is the news. I mean, got to be careful on this one. U.S. Treasuries, 10 years up, another 3 basis points, 4.23. First time it's been there in a long time. If that keeps going, I mean, I got news for you. The markets didn't look so hot. The Bund down 1 basis points, 2.30. Japan unchanged, 0.98, almost at 1%. Oil down $1.51, 70.23. So much for the big run-up in oil. Brent down $1.50, 74.54. Natural gas down 4 cents, 227. RBOB down 3 cents, 203. We've got gold up a little bit today, but it's been on such a tear. It's up 470, 276, 276, 26, 27.64. It hasn't been that high ever. Silver down 26 cents, 34.77. Copper down 4 cents, 433. We've got, get a load of this, the euro is 107. It was over 110 forever. Dollar's been really strong. British pound, same thing, 129.6. Not as bad as the euro, but still. And the Japanese yen weakening dramatically. It's up 187 to 152.93. Now that's 152.93 yen per dollar. It's the opposite way. And I keep saying that because it's not intuitive. Crypto down $1,100, 66,351. So starting to be an interesting day. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports, Andrew?
All right, it is 6:41 here in Chicago on Wednesday, October 23rd. Just a little bit of sports here. Last night, the Blackhawks played against the Canucks and lost 6-3. That's basically all I got for sports, so not much excitement there. But over in Chicago, weather also not too exciting today. Kind of right in the middle between the hot and the cold. We're at 58 degrees today. It's going to be breezy and pleasant. We're going to have some sunshine throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 63, so temperature won't change too much. And over in Phoenix, looks like they have, quote, blazing sunshine and hot, with the temperature approaching the record temperature approaching 100 degrees, which is last set in 2003. Which I feel like...
Yikes, yeah.
Yeah, it's another record-setting temperature. I feel like I just saw those one of those like 2 weeks ago. But as of right now, they're currently at 64 degrees. And yeah, they're going to be close to that record high of 100. They're going to have a high of 98 as of now. And finally, for Chicago traffic, looks like there are no major accidents to report on the inbound expressways. If you're on the outbound, things are a little bit slow on the Eisenhower and the Stevenson. But looks like that's all for today. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, I think, and I know Carl's against the well, what do you call this, the solar energy, but how do you not have as much solar energy as you can in the desert, for God's sake, when the air conditioner is around during the day? You would think would.
We do not?
I don't know.
Solar and wind.
Well, I mean, is it, do they have that much out there? I mean, I have no idea. Anyway, I don't know what you're looking at. I'm looking at the summary receipts, outlays, and deficit surplus. I've got receipts up $500 billion from last year.
I have receipts where if you go back to fiscal year 2008, they were $2.52 trillion, fell off in the recession to $2.11 and have gone up every year since then. Until through fiscal 22. So 21, I had 4.05 trillion. 22, I have 4.9 trillion. And then I have it falling to, in fiscal 23, to 4.44 trillion from 4.9.
Yeah, and this year just came out at 4.9.
Is that fiscal 24?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what Carl sent around yesterday. Just came out.
All right. I didn't see that yesterday. I mean, yesterday was an interesting day for work-wise. You were talking to Hal a lot about scheduling adjuncts and so on. Yeah, I had one who called me up, said he had a big IT disaster at work. It's going to suck up a ton of his time. Can he get out of teaching the class? That was a Monday call. Can I find someone else to teach his class, which starts the next day?
Sounds like it's you.
No, it actually, we worked it out. We worked out the whole situation. It took a lot of moving pieces around the board, but we made it work. So
you don't have to answer this question, but are universities still screwing those guys?
Well, are you saying does an adjunct make jack shit? No, they don't.
I started to tell a story. We ran out of time yesterday about our dear departed buddy Bob Golden. And Bob, you know, loves Notre Dame. He's and he had made some money along the way, so he wasn't hurting, and he wanted to teach. It wasn't like he was going to be an adjunct for his resume because he was retired, but he was going to do a course in international taxation, which I'm going to say, are there 10 people in the world? Maybe there are now that could teach the course as well as Bob. Well, he had to put together the entire course. There's no textbook on how to, duck, dodge, and hide taxes from country to country. So how long did he say he spent on that, Kevin? It was like 4 or 5 months putting the class together or something? Some huge number. I don't know if it was 8 hours a day, but it took him a while. And he taught a graduate-level class that also was in the shopping center. Now that stuff is, everybody's got Zoom and everything, Kevin, do they still have like the shopping center MBA spots for these schools where you actually go to a place or you just do it all at home?
Well, he was teaching on campus.
I know, but they had, because
do they have, does Notre Dame have a Chicago cohort? Yeah, they probably do.
Well, they used to have, when Kathy's sister Colleen went to, there was one in Schaumburg. I mean, it was in a strip mall.
Well,
for
what school?
Notre Dame.
Oh, okay. Well, that just means they rented out space enough to have a classroom.
I'm just wondering if that all went by the way the Dodo Bird when everybody has Zoom. Because it used to be you were in there and you were like Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, it may have.
But anyway.
It may have.
So,
but anyway, I've done a fair amount of course development. In fact, I took an existing course last week and totally redeveloped it. And we started yesterday. I had 20 people in the classroom. And, it's a project management class. And I've done a lot of it. First time through doing course development is hard work, but you get the hang of it and you can get really good at it. Well, it is all about objectives, about learning objectives, and so you have to get that down to a manageable number.
And then you
build your course around your learning objectives.
You guys aren't charging the same amount. Bob was teaching this, I think, to, I thought he told me 22-25 people on campus, and they probably had 4 or 5 satellite spots at the time. So say another 15 times 5. So he's teaching roughly to 100 people. I thought it was the number. It was a long time ago. The cost per class was $5,000. They were paying Bob, what, $1,750? But he got the parking place near the football stadium for football games, and I think he got tickets.
That's true. He did get access to all kinds of stuff on campus.
But 1,600 versus, What's 100 times 5 grand? That's kind of a lot, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You make a fortune off of that. There are schools that pay a hell of a lot more than we do. Purdue, even Purdue Global, their online version pays, they pay pretty darn well for adjuncts. So it just depends from school to school and what you can afford. But honestly, it's not worth it, even if you get paid pretty well. It's not worth it if you're just doing it for the money. There are way better side hustles you can get, especially if you have the expertise and the credentials you need to be able to teach at the college level. You do it because it's kind of an avocation. You're doing it almost. It's almost like a volunteer activity. It doesn't matter whether they're paying you 10 grand or 2,500. It's a lot of work, especially all the grading you have to do, all that kind of stuff, and putting up with at Notre Dame, especially putting up with students who were going to argue with you about every point. If you're going to work as an adjunct, do it because it's something you want to do, something some giving back, any of that kind of stuff. There's no other good reason to do it.
When did people start to do that, Kevin? I tell you what, I was at you were there with me at Notre Dame. I never once went to see a professor about a grade. I asked, I don't know how many questions in class, not very many. I wanted no part of any of that crap. I get to the University of Chicago, the guy gives a test, and I didn't think it was all that hard. I was in, what the hell was it in? It was in linear program or something. And I got the hang of it pretty quick. I got like a 75. The next highest mark was like a 54. The people were bitching at this guy, and this test was unfair, and I'm thinking, God, the two I missed, I was an idiot. They were easy ones, and I missed them. I wasn't that good at it, but I mean, these people are often these Eastern schools and stuff. God, bitching at your professor was like a... I never heard anybody do that before.
There's an entitlement culture that was that I'm sure was part of it.
Well, that's the first time I ever saw it, and I'm like, what are you doing? He's the professor. You don't bitch at him. What's the matter with you?
If you remember from our undergraduate days, Notre Dame's student body has changed dramatically.
Oh, I'm sure.
As they've upped their, they've tried to gain a lot of acceptance as in the academic world that they didn't necessarily have. So when we went there, it was a place for normal people, And so you had to be a good student. You had to have good SAT scores and those kinds of things, but you didn't have to be spectacular. Now it's so selective that they're fishing in the same pond as a lot of the Ivy schools and USC and Stanford and so on. That's where they're recruiting, and that's the type of students they're getting. And Bob used to have to put up with all that kind of stuff all the time. I don't. I occasionally get someone who wants to argue every point. But for the most part, I get people who are just, they're there to learn. And if they take some lumps along the way, that's part of the learning process.
I think a lot of it had to do, Kevin, with the generation of the parents of the people. Although these people had the same parents I did. But maybe if you were in New York or someplace, your parents were different. But I don't ever remember winning an argument. Oh, I did lousy on a test in fourth grade. It was the nun's fault. That was a non-starter from back then.
Yeah, your mom would have kicked you right in the backside.
Oh yeah, I would say then in high school the thought of there were a couple teachers that somehow percolated up that weren't the best, and the next year they weren't there. But just in general, to go home and say I flunked, but it was a teacher's fault, was just a non-starter. I mean, you weren't paying as much, but still, hey. The thing, we were talking about these numbers on the deficit here, and we were talking yesterday a little bit about, whoever gets this job, God, do you really want it? I mean, I don't know when I've seen, other than 1929, Kevin, I keep saying that because it's the numbers are right there. I sure as hell don't want that. How exactly do you bend, and this has been my whole economic life is monetary theory, how exactly, when you've so egregiously bleeped up, like these guys have, poured so much money into the system unevenly to where you've just had 10% of the population, maybe even 1 or 2%, just leave the rest of the people in the dust. I mean, you look around and you see, you go into a high-end bar in the Riverwalk or someplace, these people throw around money, they might as well be, a $100 bill is a joke to light a cigarette with. I mean, for them, a $100 bill is nothing. You know, other people are still making $12, $13 an hour, and a $100 bill is like a lot of dough. I mean, I've never seen this kind of a gap in my lifetime. I barely can even read about it. And I don't see how anybody in my bitch with Biden, I mean, I'll say straight out that most of the inflation was caused during the Trump administration, but there wasn't like any sort of realization that the reason why he did it was because of COVID, and maybe we'd have done the same thing, we being the Democrats, which it isn't me, that now we have to figure out a way to pull back on this before it gets even more egregious and we never come back. Well, these guys didn't do that. I don't think Trump would have done that either. But now we've got to the point where the power is clearly in the hand of the people that have participated in this wealth bubble. You will never get this country to say, I'll trade a 20% drop in the stock market to get the rest of the people maybe back on track here a little bit and even this out a little bit. You can't do that. I mean, I'm going to say the Fed job right now in the minds of most people, maybe most of my clients, you know what, maybe even me, I don't want my clients moving money, is to keep this market and keep this crap where it is. And I don't see how the hell you do that, Kevin, while we're supposedly dealing with inflation on the low end. It's just gone. When you have somebody who can pay cash for these houses at 450 like Audrey's talking about, you're never going to get the two people coming out of one of your schools having a real job, being able to plunk down 85 grand and take on that mortgage and insurance and stuff. You're not even close. Now, if we want to come anywhere near that, I think unless you find a way to really raise up the bottom end, which is tough to do, I don't see how some of the top end doesn't have to come down a little bit. Not, you know, hopefully not 50%, but maybe 10 or 20. Get the houses back down to like 375 or something instead of 405. I don't see how you do that. I mean, politically, anything, I mean, nobody can do it. That's not where the power is. You and I don't have that vote. We think we do, but we don't.
If you don't want to go through the true pain of it, and nobody does, because as we found with inflation, whoever is in charge when the pain is suffered is going to get the blame. So nobody wants to go through the pain that we have to correct where we are. I get that. So your alternative then is that we have to be on some kind of a very long-term path. If that's even possible, and I don't even know if it's possible, but it would be to get on some kind of a long-term path that would allow us to, step by step, year by year, sort of like that the budget plan. Who did the
2-0 hatchet face guys, Simpson Bowles.
They did that for Obama, and Obama said thank you very much, and then ignored it.
Thank you very little is what he said, actually.
they were a start, and you could start down this path of trying to get some sanity back into the budget, back into the amount of spending, back into any of that, and the problem is we're not going to be able to keep it, because election by election we keep lurching back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Let's say Trump were to win, because whoever is going to be set up for the next election, and if we had a decent run for 4 years under Trump, Vance would be set up for the next election. Maybe he could continue a process if we were fortunate enough to create such a thing. I'm not optimistic.
Well, I mean, I don't
know that we could pull it off politically, let alone.
I don't see how.
Let alone whether we're going to or not, whether that's on anybody's radar or not. I just don't know if we could pull it off.
Well, if you look at the people running, you see there's a huge difference between the two. Okay, fair enough on a lot of issues. If you look at the last 24 years, whenever Republicans and Democrats have been in office, you look at deficit numbers, you look at inflation numbers, you look at any of that stuff, you can't tell when one left and when the other one came in. Virtually. It's not like, oh, the Republicans are there, all of a sudden we have fiscal discipline, or something else, or the Democrats come in, all of a sudden they're really good at this, and this is what happened. You're not seeing that at all, Kevin. But the question is...
I agree, and so you're not seeing it at all, so if we have to instill some discipline in there, then not only does it have to happen, but it has to carry through multiple administrations. And that's what I'm saying, is good luck pulling that off. Even if we were inclined to do it right now, the first time, after the next election, and we elect somebody, we hire Elon Musk, and he comes in and chops 70% of the government out, just like he did at Twitter. And it's okay, and we find out we really didn't need all this. Let's just say that's our wonderful scenario, and it all happens great. Do you think that's going to survive in the next administration? And I think the answer to that is highly doubtful.
Well, there's a piece of paper somewhere buried in my office that I'm continually trying to clean that says one of the most amazing polls ever, Kevin, was she showed you how, as you know, I believe there's no such thing as a dumb human being. There isn't anybody on earth that doesn't know something that I don't know. So
you're kind of the Father Flanagan of stupidity or lack thereof.
Well, but I also know that collectively we are dumb as rocks sometimes, right? He had a group that went out and did a survey of. Again, I'm talking about a survey. All I did was criticize surveys. But anyway, interviewed God knows how many Americans, and virtually every one of them said they want the government to cut out, to balance the budget, but every check that they get or every program that they get should not be cut. So essentially, they're talking about the same thing. I had this discussion, more argument with Mr. Flanagan the other day. If this Musk, he talks pretty big game for a guy that wouldn't be in business if it wasn't for carbon credits, in my opinion. But that's another story.
Yeah, he'd be in business. The part that wouldn't be is Tesla wouldn't be.
He wouldn't have gone on to this other stuff if he wasn't milking the money. Whatever, we'll talk about that.
I think he was into the other stuff first.
But whatever. Okay, so if you and I were the two knuckleheads that landed in the old Oval Office, and we took on this job. And by the way, you're not getting any argument out of me. I have been the biggest critic of the consumer, whatever that thing is, Elizabeth Warren's group. Those are 15,000 people that I'm not saying they don't do anything every day. I'm not saying they aren't well-meaning. I'm not saying they maybe haven't done some good stuff, but I said from day one, it's duplicative. That's what the Federal Reserve is supposed to be doing with banks. It's what the Comptroller of Currency was doing and not doing. The idea is if the person supposed to be doing the job doesn't do it, instead of making them do it, you get another unit to do it. That's crazy. I mean, I'm with you on all that stuff. But if we spent, say people were stupid enough to elect us two times, if we spent 8 years doing that, Kevin, and we got rid of 25% of people in Washington, which is high, say 15, we got rid of a lot of the bloat, it's like 1% of the budget. It's a massive battle for nothing.
Yeah, it's all healthcare. I mean that's the big nut. It's the big spend, and it's the one that with a different approach could be tamed.
But it's defense.
But nobody wants to do that either.
It's defense. Everybody wants to build another. We do stuff like the F-22. We spend all that money, and then all of a sudden we cut it off after a certain number of planes. When the price of the planes are going down. I mean, we can't wait to have another aircraft carrier, but guess what? We don't have an oil supply ship for the task force. I mean, people love these high-priced deals, and yet I think there's a lot of waste in the defense area. Mike will say that. There's waste everywhere. It's government. But now, if you waste it on shore, and you and I get a PT boat contract in World War II at 10% over what we should, and we pay people a little more than maybe they should, and shop at the local store and drink at the local bar, it's not the same as buying something overseas and paying more, is it? Plus, I think we got a dash here.
The Rhodes family.
Yeah. But my question is, what are we going to do on all this? Is with Russell, you can pile on. What happens if all of a sudden these interest rates go flying up? I mean, I don't want to see it, but I could see this 10-year rate.
But we already got a taste of that in the last year.
In the last 2 weeks. It's up like a tenth of a point a day. But my point is, I don't care. I got this thing. I got to shove this in here. I got this thing from Quora. Somebody writes in and they said, why is the presidential election so divisive? And the guy says, that's simple. It has nothing to do with Harris or Trump. People in America now, for whatever reason, whether they don't feel they're working together or they think they're getting screwed or something, how many people think it's all somebody else's fault and hate people? You know, this group isn't getting enough. That group's not getting enough. That group's getting too much and it should be mine. He goes, the reason why we're divisive is because we absolutely hate each other. And you know what, Kevin? He's not wrong. He's not wrong, unfortunately. I don't. You don't. But an awful lot of people, boy, are at home on one side or the other watching that TV, hating the other side. They don't even know what they're hating, but they're hating it.
Yeah, that is. And on that happy note.
That happy note. We're going to find out all about...
I'll bolt out of here, and it looks like you've got Russell and Maggie in today, so
that'll be cool.
I look forward to listening.
S&P futures down 14, and NASDAQ futures down 71. Andrew, why don't you give us like a 30-second break, and we'll be right back.
All right, looks like the little ad program, man, it's just shut down on me.
Well, that's right. That's not have a break.
Here.
It's not have a break. You're the break to tell us the ad program shut down.
Sure, yeah. I mean, what can I advertise today?
Well, let's advertise to Russell. Professor.
Hi.
How are you, bud?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
All right. What's up, man? Introduce your guest. We've had her before.
Yeah, we've got Maggie Rhodes, who is a reporter for Planet Forward and does a bunch of other stuff and goes to college in D.C. And last week, she was in Rome at a food conference learning all about food security and everything.
Food security.
And that way, what did you do, Maggie? And I don't want to hear about going to the Vatican again.
I went to the World Food Forum, which is hosted annually by FAO, or the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. And I focused my coverage on education games. So, like, there was one game that was a modded version of Minecraft I reported on that should be coming out soon, and the Rome Water Dialogue.
Rome Water Dialogue. Well, what's that? It
has to do with they're dealing with, not water insecurities, like lack of water in certain areas and how to get water.
Ah.
Yeah, to like plant crops and those sorts of things. And they talked about like their plan. And the specific part I'm focusing on is let me pull up my notes. Is they focused on like how to actually implement these ideas, because oftentimes the UN is seen as an organization with these huge ideas and people don't know how they're actually implemented. So when they were releasing their plan at the end, they had these 10 bullet points, which can be found online, about how they're actually going to implement these ideas. So I'm going to introduce like what exactly happened at the dialogue, and then say how they're going to be implemented, those sorts of things.
You know, I wouldn't expect your old man to know about any of this stuff, but now that you've brought it up, I actually was just reading this thing a while ago. Sorry, Russell, I had to give you a shot.
Okay.
I actually was reading this thing about, you know what, Russell, did we talk about this? There was somebody just, it had to be from the same conference, Maggie. There was somebody talked about flashpoints around the world where there could be essentially wars over water.
That was not this conference.
Okay,
they didn't get to that extreme, but yeah, there have been... I know that's been a consistent concern, that we're going to start running out of clean water and people are going to end up having a fight over it.
Well, wasn't it one of the spots where the Turks put up the dam, and if they put up another dam, the people below them are going to invade because they want the water? But there had to be eight spots around the world that said water is a massive issue.
Yeah, and I know in Southeast Asia, because there are big rivers that run through various countries, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah, who has a right to it, and can you dam it all up before it gets to the next country, which you really shouldn't do. But
yeah, It talks about how water's mainly found underground, and I know one of my colleagues did, like, a video, I forget who exactly it was, because it's two of them working together, and they were holding, like, this basket of fruit, and it was, like, it's like a bed, like, imagine, like, your typical wooden basket with, like, two handles on it, and they're like, oh, this amount of fruit takes, like, 40 gallons of water, and it's, like, not that much fruit. It's probably how much fruit I personally eat a week. So, yeah, they were talking about that too, and how it can lead, like, that's why they brought up water, because it could also lead to, like, lack of water can also lead to food insecurity, because, you know, you need water to either, like, water plants or even feed, or even hydrate livestock or all those sorts of things.
Did you ever go to a winery out in California?
Oh, I did not. We kind of just, like, stuck in downtown, like, Rome. It's really fun. I mean, as I stated, I went to the Vatican, I went to the Pantheon, I went to the Trevi, I did a lot of shopping, wow. I went to the Colosseum, and that was it. The only thing I did it like an actual tour for was the Vatican, because that's important to me.
Did you get the double secret tour? I mean, you get all
I
your...
I did.
Good for you.
I did. Yeah.
Did you say hiya, Pope? Did you get an audience?
I did not. I was planning on going, but we were kind of out really late the night before, and I was like, I can go, but I won't do my best job reporting today, so I didn't go, because I'm probably going to go back in March.
You wouldn't be the first person who met the Pope hungover.
Yes.
I don't think there was a hangover component to it.
Oh, okay.
But. No, I don't drink. No, I watched all my colleagues drink, but I don't drink. That's not a choice I make.
Well, you can be hungover on Cokes and no sleep.
I also don't drink soda.
Oh, there you go. Well, anyway.
I'm kind of boring. Sorry.
We've got to have a paternity test at some point.
God.
Sorry, Chief. I'm kind of boring. Yeah.
You don't sound boring to me. It sounds like one hell of a trip. So it was
one of my colleagues only got like 5 hours of sleep the whole week. Like, we were traveling back, and I was like, I don't know how you're still alive. Well, like, he was just like up the whole time. Like, I'd be up at, because we stayed in an Airbnb, and like, I have other stuff I need to get done. So I was up till like 1 o'clock most mornings, just like working on stuff, you know, watching TV in the kitchen. And like, he would just like come like waltzing in there, and I'm like, how are you still up? And he's like, I just am. And then it's like, I would go to bed, and then another one of my colleagues would wake up at like 5 a.m. and he'd still be up. Like, he's just up the whole time. It was crazy.
Well, you know, if you probably know this because you're a Washington person, but one of the kind of the amazing thing of like most all presidents and people like that is they can go fine on like 4 and 5 hours sleep. Their energy level is really something the regular population doesn't have.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, no, I'm saying he got, like, 5 hours of sleep, like, the whole week. Like, he got 1 hour of sleep every night.
Well, what is the tour that is not regular people, what did you get to see that, like, I wouldn't have, I just went over?
They took us directly from the Sistine Chapel to St. Peter's Basilica through, like, a little secret hallway that's not accessible to the public.
Wow.
So, I don't know, it was just, like, we weren't allowed to take any pictures, but it was pretty cool. I honestly didn't take a lot of pictures. I just wanted to, like, soak everything in.
What is the, changing subjects, what is the tone in Washington about the election? Are 2 weeks from today, are we going to have a president, or are we going to be fighting about this for a year?
No, there'll probably be recounts in a lot of the swing states with very close margins. So.
This question for you. How do you recount a mail-in ballot if you separate the signature from the ballot, like a lot of states do? How do you know it's legit?
I have no idea. Honestly, I work for AP, and like I'm in charge of putting all their I'm in charge of putting the votes in for certain. Like, for certain states for this general election. I have not gotten my states yet. I'm really hoping I get a swing state. But like, I did a few primary elections for them, and there's actually, like, no way to... I hope not a lot of people are listening to this, but there's actually no way to, like, directly verify the sides with a stringer staying on the phone. Like, we have a, like, the stringer just says, okay, this is the number of votes we counted, and you have to take their word for it. So there's actually no direct way for AP to verify at the election results besides for what the person is saying and who are counting the votes.
Well, bear with me for a second and hold your nose, because I'll tell you what we did in the, I think it was the 72 election. It's a long time ago. I had a car, right, down at school. I had a big old junky Oldsmobile. So we signed up to be, I guess we didn't know we were a stringer, but I guess we were stringers, right? We signed up for like 15 different precincts. And I had to drop people off, and I had a couple myself, and you had to run in right at when the polls closed at 6 o'clock. They had machines. You probably somewhere in a museum out there, you'll see a polling machine. In the minute the polls ended, they drew back the curtains, and you looked at the back of the machine, and they read out the numbers. And they gave every one of us this 800 number, because nobody had any cell phones. So you ran over to the phone, and you said that the numbers from the precinct for, I think it was, God, was it Ford and somebody. And that's what they did back then. I assume what they're doing now is sort of the same thing, just a lot more modern, right? They took our word for it. They didn't say. Now, I'm sure there was an official count that went in somewhere else, but the count that they took was the count that we did off the phone, right? I guess we could have been idiots and given them the wrong number, but we didn't think of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what you guys, same sort of thing? That's where the stringers get the votes in that quick?
Yeah, it's a little bit, because like I sit on my couch. So I take calls from stringers. And like the stringers will call and they will say like just like the number, and like I have to type it in, but there's no like besides like I'm sure like I'm this is not gonna be, I'm pretty sure that like some states have observers in the election counting room, but you really gotta like trust those people that are actually in the room. But I should also say, if I get a call and like the number is like the number of votes is super high or is less than last time, we get like an alert in the system, and we have to ask them like, why is it lower? You know, like those sorts of things. But like that's only happened to me like once, because there was like because the other person like misspoke, and I was like, are you sure it's this number? And he's like, oh, like that's one less zero.
Okay. So even like the precinct down the block from me, somebody calls that number in before the official report that night, so that's how they get it quicker. Or reports it somehow. That's interesting.
Can you repeat that?
I mean, somebody.
It's interesting.
I mean, somebody. I mean, there's got to be an official way they get the number to the county or whatever, but somebody has to look at it and call it in faster than that, right? I mean, nobody wants to wait till 8 or 9 o'clock. They want it right away, right?
I mean, but, like, we get the calls at 8 or 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like, my shifts from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Okay, wow. Sounds like
it's fine. I sit on my couch and like I wait for calls and I do other homework. It's not that big of a deal. But I can say I assist AP's election team, and I think that's pretty cool.
Well, you can not only can say it, but you did it.
Yeah.
You're not lying. What's the mood out there? I mean, allegedly, if Trump were to win, there's gonna be a big shakeup in the bureaucracy. Are you feeling that from the people you see every day, or? Are anybody working for the government kind of afraid or anything like that? Or do they think it's all, you know, it's all just electioneering?
I don't know. Personally, for me, like, so I'm on GW's campus a lot, and it's kind of just, like, students here. And there's a lot of students who feel that, like, they're like, oh, yeah, this election cycle is going to be really crazy. But, like, that's really just a result of, like, worrying about things that, like, you and they cannot change. Because at the end of the day, you're only, like, one vote. I personally don't like to waste my time worrying about things that I can't change. Like, the universe, or, like, in my opinion, God, already knows who's going to win the election. Like, it is what it is. I can't change it. My single vote, my absentee ballot in Illinois where Biden's going to win, like, the what, like, slightly less than 20 electoral votes. Like, it's gonna happen. Like, no, not by. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was saying.
Yeah, in the morning.
There's a Freudian slip.
You said, yeah.
Oops. Where Harris is gonna win, like, the slightly less than 20 electoral votes in Illinois. Like, it's gonna happen. So there's a lot of people, like, on GWC, or, like, a lot of the adults I've talked to, or they're just, like, nervous about it. I'm like, well, like, you can't change it. So personally, I'm not too nervous about it. What I personally think is interesting is the results of the election affect both of my lines of work. So for, like, I work on the Trump book. I've been pretty open about this. So I work on a book about former President Donald Trump and the 2024 presidential election and, like, his campaign, all those sorts of things. And, like, if he wins, like, that would be pretty good for the book. Because at least in my opinion, no one wants to, at least in my opinion, no one wants to read about a loser. I don't know, before, like, right when I got this job, I was assigned to read Game Change, which is about, I think, yeah, it was about 2008. Yeah, it's about 2008. It was about the, it was, like, the battle between, like, the two top Democratic and Republican contenders. And I only enjoyed reading the parts about Obama because I knew he was going to win. Like, I didn't really, like, care about the McCain story because I'm like, okay, but they're going to lose. That's just my opinion. So for, like, the book, it would be better that Trump would win because I think more people would want to read it. However, for my work at Planet Forward, which is a climate change solutions-based publication, right now I focus on the 2024 election. So I did two stories for them about the debates through a climate change lens and what questions they answered on climate change and what they said, and also fact-checked them. But I don't mind saying what stories I'm doing for them. But, like, my next story is, like, Trump and Harris's position, and then we do another article whether or not Trump or Harris lost and what it means for climate change, and then I have a bunch of other pieces I'm going to pitch for them. But, like, that election, like, if Harris wins, like, obviously it'll be better for environmental policy and things that I'm going to cover, and it's going to be generally more like, okay, these are the initiatives that are being made. Versus if Trump were win, it's most likely going to be like, okay, these are the initiatives that are being taken down. So really, like, a lot of people, at least at GW in my school, are like, oh, wow, like, this election is going to be really crazy. I'm like, well, yeah, it might be crazy for you on a personal level, but it's crazy for me on a personal as well as professional level. So, and I don't see a lot of people who are professionally affected by the election, but I think that's where the main concern comes in. It's like, well, there's, like, professionally for me, there's, like, these two options, and they both have their pros and cons, so.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And there's also the camp that a lot of times on the show we talk about is they talk about being different, but you look at the numbers, they really aren't in a lot of areas, which of course frosts both sides. But, I mean, there's a million people, but I don't want to go into it because I don't want to talk to you, but you talk about the Republicans are all convinced that Biden has buried the oil industry, yet we're creating record numbers of oil every day. So, I mean, a lot of stuff is just not true. Does nobody do, I'm showing my age here, you're writing a book on the Trump campaign.
I'm not writing a book, I'm helping write
okay,
a book.
Okay, whatever. In my mind, you're the author. I don't know the other guy.
Alex, who's my favorite.
there were people, Theodore H. White started in 1960, recovered both campaigns and could embed a reporter in each campaign for every meeting and everything, but couldn't publish anything until after the election. Nobody does that anymore, right? There's nobody that's actually writing a book on, you know, the making of the president 2024. I think he's dead. So there is there a corresponding book going on for the Harris campaign, I guess is my question.
No. At least I know for the Biden team did not want to do any books.
Okay.
Basically, I don't know, because we're saying for this book, there's, like, a lot of scoops that have not been released yet, and, like, a lot of scoops I've known about for, like, the past 18 months that have not been released yet. So, yeah.
Well, the interesting, I'm wondering, I'm asking you, because you might probably know this, or maybe your dad, when Bush ran against Gore, that was, like, the last year that I know of that people did that, and they had somebody in each campaign. And because the election wasn't decided, they published, like, a huge, they didn't publish the book, and that's my question. They published a huge, like, preamble in U.S. News and World Report. It was, like, 40 pages in the magazine. I don't think the book ever came out, because I think they spilled all the beans after the election, but before there was a president, which I think they must have thought was not what they were supposed to do, and I think they got pissed off at him or something. I don't know, but I still have that at home, but it's fascinating reading and the mistakes the Gore campaign made and the mistakes the Bush campaign made, and yet Bush ended up getting in there. It was pretty fascinating. So I don't But I think that doesn't happen anymore. So you're probably just doing helping with the one side, which would be fun.
Yeah.
I'd like to read it no matter what. I mean, whether it's whether they win or lose, because there's probably some reasons that you've come across that say, well, if he does lose, here's three big oopsies that he shouldn't have done, and maybe it would have been different. I mean, I'm sure you have opinions.
Oh, no,
on
it. It's like, it's not, what's it called? It's not like an opinion. It's just like stating what happened. So these are the things that happened.
Oh, I know that, but I'm saying I bet, well, in this one, for instance, they basically said that if Gore would have hired Bill Daley as his campaign manager a month sooner, he'd have won. Because the difference in the campaign after Daley was there for 2 weeks and before was dramatic. It was a mess, mm-hmm. You know, there was stuff like that. And there was things that, you know, the Bush campaign did that was, you know, if they had to do over again, wouldn't do. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, right? I mean, it's not like... So how do you... What is your actual major at George Washington?
I'm going to show my age. I was born in 2004, so I wasn't alive for Bush versus Gore. But anyway, my major is journalism and political science.
Cool. That's what I figured. I thought maybe you were... well, they don't have in Notre Dame, that would be government, probably would be political science, but...
Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, is that what you... Obviously, that's... Now, you're either going to be a senator or you're going to be a 60 Minutes reporter. There's like a fork in the road at the end of the graduation.
No, I'm going to focus on journalism.
So, if nominated, you will not run, and if elected, you will not serve?
I don't think people would want me to serve.
I don't know. I think you're pretty bright. Why wouldn't I watch you in there? I mean, it's I think we need some. What's your? I've not read anything that has a take on the House or the Senate yet, other than they're both kind of toss ups. What Senate? I think is what they think is going Republican because there's more Democrats up for seats. But the House, they've got, is that too close to call? I haven't read anything about that. Have you?
This was a couple of weeks ago. I went to the Cook Political Report. They had their, like, 2024... What exactly did they call it? Let me check. What was it called? Yeah, because even though I have quite a few things going on, I do spend some time making sure I do interesting things. Yeah. So the Cook Political Report came to GW and did their 2024 election preview. And it was great. And they talked about, like, what's probably going to happen during this election. And they honestly said it was, like, such a toss-up. But the House editor, who I believe her name is Erin, like during the Q&A section, I felt kind of bad because she wasn't getting any questions. People were so focused on the Senate and the presidency. So,
well, I would have thought that the House had no chance of turning Democrat, but evidently Kenny Pulcheri was on yesterday and said, no, well, smart money has the House turning. I don't know about that.
You never know. So, I mean, honestly, like, polls can like help us predict what will happen, but they're never going to be like the actual predictor.
What is it's getting harder and harder. I mean, before your time, whenever we had landlines, people somehow or another, and maybe Russell can speak to this, people weren't as pissed off if you called on a landline like at night or something. You might be watching a ball game and not really all that happy, but it's, for some reason, it was not as intrusive as calling somebody on their cell phone during a meeting at work. People kind of, for whatever reason, people think it's, and I, you know, I've got people call me on polls and I never answer them. Now, if they call me at night, I don't have a landline anymore, so they can't. But if they did, I don't know how you even poll people anymore. Do you?
I'm not a pollster, but I know they mainly rely on like focus groups, so sort of like the same groups of like focus groups are like the same small group of people and seeing like how their views shift, and they focus on like those specific people. But personally for me, I don't know how accurate those people can be, because at least if you're pulling like a bunch of random people, like they might have a tendency to like lie about who they're voting for, because it might be, at least in 2016, they, one of the reasons why they thought some of their polls were off, like regarding the results, is that people lied saying they were going to vote for Clinton and not Trump, because that was something that was seen as more societal, like more acceptable, if that makes sense.
Yep.
But I don't know.
Well,
I don't really focus on the polls. I'm more focused on like what's happening.
Well, just
and schoolwork. I also focus on my schoolwork.
Well, yeah,
you do.
Well, you can't be doing all this other stuff if you're flunking.
Yeah, no, I have A's in all my classes. I have a 4.0.
Well, good for you. Good for you.
And yeah, so, I mean,
I'm telling you, we got to get a paternity test.
What do you mean? You're not so bad, and your wife's very nice.
I know. I'm just kidding.
It's not like kidding. God, I was going to say something nasty, but I won't. Not for you guys, but who was the lady, Celine Dion?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's a spectacular singer. She's drop-dead gorgeous. Did you ever see her family?
No, they don't look like anything like her at all?
They look like the girl who was in The Munsters.
Oh my God.
The beautiful girl who was in The Munsters.
Be nice.
I mean, anyway, I'm sure the family's very nice, but God bless.
Yeah.
She doesn't look like any of the rest of them at all. She's like a foot taller. It's really something. Anyway, but...
They found her under a rock somewhere and figured out that she could sing.
Yeah.
So they kept her.
Well, you know, you guys are not in Chicago, but if you were here, Maggie, you would find some serious research for your what you like to do. The school board elections here is the first time Chicago's going to have an elected after school board's going to be elected. The school board elections, we're talking bare knuckle. This is serious stuff. The mudslinging back
and
forth.
Yeah, that's how it was in the suburb that I grew up.
Really,
the school board was really serious. I mean,
yeah.
I might have known someone that was on the school board. If you would like to comment right now.
Oh yeah, but Russell, I'm going to say 80% of the political stuff I'm getting in the mail has to do with the school board election. None of the other stuff.
Really? I wonder why that is. Because the
mayor is lost. He seems.
Well, I know. I understand why they changed it, and they should have changed it because the school board really wasn't accountable to anybody.
Well, he's still going to get 11 picks out of the 21.
Yeah.
But this one lady running, Ellen Rosen something something, Jewish name, she's running against this Johnson's person. And mm-hmm. it's weird. But now the alderman, he's lost like every alderman but maybe five. So the alderman is absolutely coming out against his person and for this lady. But everything that's being said about her from everybody, the alderman and other people, is positive. The other side, who's ever running Johnson's candidate, she's a Republican, she's a communist. Everything, their entire thing is negative about this lady. Nothing positive about the one they're running. It's so bizarre, the difference in tactic. But I wonder who's going to win. I mean, Johnson's. I think he's lost everybody's. I mean, right now, the politics here is somebody needs to be writing this book. You can't be writing two, Maggie. But somebody needs to be writing this one because it's really something going on. What's going on in Chicago? Do you think? Well, you know, it's weird because we have had a couple in our lifetime, Russell. A couple of Obama had a Democratic House and Senate, right? And didn't George Bush the second have a Republican House and Senate? And all the infighting was between the two factions of the majority party. It wasn't like they got a whole lot done, was it?
They still couldn't get anything done because people are all over the spectrum, even though they're in the same party.
Well, they did get Obamacare through, which probably wouldn't have if.
Right.
But the let's go to a quick break here, and then we'll come back and continue because this is fascinating. By the way, my niece was just in Italy. They were in northern Italy, and then they took the train down to Naples, which that was kind of a long way. But
Venice and Milan.
Yeah, they were in the area I wanted to go is like Siena and Florence and stuff. I'd like to go up there. My Italian side of the family is right across from Rome on the other coast, in a town called the province is Abruzzi. I forget the name of the town. Something, Anginova or something, something. So, but I've never been there. My brother was. My niece went to school over there for a year. Matter of fact, she went under the University of Indiana group, Russell.
Yeah.
And even though she was going to Wisconsin, it was on the Indiana has a big group of people in Florence, I think, and she was in that group. She had a great time. SP Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures down 57. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite.
been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamal Andrew on the board. Go through this real quick. S&P futures up down 15, NASDAQ futures down 66. We've kind of been like this the last few days, then we come creeping back on the close. We'll see if we do that again. Europe would be, again, we're going to be quick here. The main news again is that the 10-year rate is now 4.25. It's up another 0.42 today. That seems to be, we're going to get Russell's opinion on that. Europe is down but a little bit. Don't have to go through the details. Nikkei up down 307.8. Hang Seng is up 261, 1.3. Shanghai up 16.5. Again, we can't let Russell go without getting his China take here. Yesterday, Dow was down 6, S&P down 2, NASDAQ up 33, a nothing day. Bonds, again, 4.25 on the 10-year. We've got oil going down again, almost down to 70, 70.43, down $1.31. We've got gold down $2, but still, 27.57. It's been on a tear. Silver down 38 cents. That's 1.1, but it was up almost 2% yesterday. The dollar continues to be strong. The euro is down to 107.7. We have Russell comment on that as well. British pound not as bad, but still going down versus the dollar. 129.5. What do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports.
All right. It is 7:34 here in Chicago. Just for sports, last night the Blackhawks played against the Canucks, and the Blackhawks lost, and in their game, 6-3. For Chicago weather, it is currently 58 degrees. It's going to be a little bit of hot, a little bit of cold, a little bit of clouds, a little bit of sun all throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 63. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 65 degrees, but they're going to have a whole lot of hot, getting close to a record set in 2003. They're going to be having a high of 98 degrees today, probably all sunny skies. And then finally, for Chicago traffic, if you're on the in or the outbound, it is basically pure in the red. Thankfully, no major accidents to report, but things are just looking pretty slow on all major expressways today. So that is the quick wrap-up. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, real quick. Well, I guess, you know, I'll ask Maggie first. But when you talk about the election and all this stuff going back and forth, and yesterday the thing flying around about Trump not paying for the lady's funeral or something, I mean, the stuff that is coming to the fore in this thing is so bizarre. Does anybody ever actually sit down and say, you know, both of you creatures, Trump and Harris, what are you going to do about this, you know, $1.8 trillion deficit last year? I mean, is anybody talking anywhere about anything substantive? That's a big question, I know. I mean, Maggie,
I'm not going to give my opinion, but I think they're talking about different issues that are substantive. So,
well, I mean,
like, I think abortion is it's definitely a big one.
Yeah.
At least earlier in the campaign, it was a big one. I think Israel versus Palestine is still a big one.
Different
topics, not the deficit. Just other things.
No, neither of them. I'm writing the financial market preview for the Kelley School. In fact, it's due today. I have to do a market preview for 2025 without knowing who's going to win the election.
Well, that's because you're going to be on the TV like they used to be in University of Chicago at the annual forecast luncheon. You're going to be one of the guys.
Well, I that's actually what I'm doing next Wednesday, so I will not be here. I will remind you of that.
Okay.
in fact, I was just thinking that. I was like, yeah, next Wednesday. I got to let him know that. But
maybe we'll grab Maggie and jump you.
Well, I will tell you what I do say with respect to the election, and this is kind of a consensus. There's a whole group of people that we discuss all of this, and then I go off and write it. It's about 20 people that are on the FutureCast committee, and the feeling really is that, and you know, they say a lot, and then what they actually do can be different than what they say. Although Trump generally does what he says he's going to do, for better or worse, you know, at least you know, you kind of know what you're going to get from him. You know, he says he's going to, you know, pare down government, but like you said, you know, paring down government's like 1%. That's not that's not where the big deficit is. But what I do say about the election is we don't really know at this point, but if you listen to the candidates, it doesn't sound like anybody's going to have any fiscal restraint.
Well,
you're talking, and this actually ties into what you've been noting, that the 10-year is ticking higher. You know, if you don't get fiscal restraint out of the federal government, or you start to get some new initiatives that start spending more money, we're going to see a second round of inflation, and that is going to be catastrophic for, you know, it's not going to be good for the stock market, because the stock market is completely hanging its hat on the Fed funds rate dropping by about 2% from where it is right now through the end of next year. If you start to see the back off of that,
I predicted, and you didn't argue. I predicted, and you didn't argue too strenuously, that in 18 months we could see a short-term rate of 4 and a 10-year rate of 6.5.
I can see that.
You know,
I can totally see that. I mean, right now, and it's funny because our models, and this is, not everybody agrees on everything. Our model actually thinks that we're going to overshoot what the derivative market's pricing in right now. Like, derivative market's pricing in 3.3%, and we're looking at 3.
Well, the short term, the Fed can do.
But I don't know if I totally agree with that, but,
well, but if they,
that's what our models have.
Here's what, and sorry to bore you here, Maggie, but what the Fed is doing right now is almost, it's totally different than what they did 5-6 years ago. Five, six years ago, they poured money into the system, but if anybody like you or me said, wow, these bonds are going to go down, and tried to sell them, they jammed them right up our behind and put them on their balance sheet. So right now they're putting money back in the system, but they're actually lowering the balance sheet, which means they're not going to protect.
That's where the tick higher is coming from.
Well, but they're also, it means they're not protecting the further out. They're not being like Europe to buy stuff at a lower interest, you know, at a negative interest rate, mm-hmm. or something. They were the buyers. So yeah. It's kind of an odd thing here, but you wonder. I mean, the thing that I have, and I know COVID was an issue, but the thing I have here about Trump, in addition to the personal stuff, I never could stand the guy on a personal level, he had 4 years to do this. He's not going to take on big pharma. If you look at the orangutan in the room, it's medical stuff. He had 4 years. He didn't do anything. Now, this lady had 4 years. They didn't do anything, but she wasn't the president. So I guess that's a, I don't know. What was she ever able to do in the administration? God only knows. But
I have a feeling she really wasn't that involved in anything.
That's what I'm thinking. But
I it's not just her. I think you could say the same thing about Mike Pence.
Yeah.
Other than maybe he tried to, you know, probably the last vice president we had that was really involved might have been Cheney.
He ran the place. He wasn't just involved.
Yeah, I know. Well, even if you know, he was only doing half of what, apparently W started to really take over in the second term.
Oh, well, maybe it could very well. But what I'm saying here is we see the big. I mean, we had, you know, Carl likes to rant a lot about the immigration policy, and you know what? I don't like seeing people swimming across the river either. But it comes down to, yesterday I looked. Maggie probably knows about this. They had the big conclave in the, you know, in the House, which is the Republican side, about how much this is costing everybody, and they're talking about somewhere between 150, 250,
billion dollars to deal with the immigration problem. Which, now, if it's 250 or 300, I'm going to say at least half that money goes into some glandhander's pockets and not to the immigration policy. But the total budget of state, local, and federal stuff is $11.5 trillion. All right, so if we spend $300 billion on migrants, which I don't want to do, I mean, I get the problem. The idea that nobody's getting any money because we're all spending it on those people is just not true. It just isn't true. It's like 1%. You know, see, when you look at, I guess if you really want to be a political person, Maggie, you can't look at the numbers because all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, did I really just say that? I mean, some people are convinced that like half of our money is going to migrants. No, it's not. No, it's not. Come on. I mean,
but should any of it be going to them?
Well, but I mean, should any of it be going to any other crooks that got their hand out to the government?
No, I know.
I mean, I started by saying I want to solve the problem. I don't want an open border, but I also know, you know, as Maggie's talked about earlier, the problem in the Middle East. How many refugees have just been made in the last year over there? 2 million.
Easily. Yeah.
I mean, it's how many people? Hey, I don't want to ask you, Maggie, when you were talking about the worldwide in Rome. Did the topic come up of inflation versus people eating worldwide? My brother used to trade in the corn option pit. He constantly looks at this thing that talks about the cereal. And if the price of cereal worldwide gets over $5 a day, or 5 hours for something and something, it equals more than 5 hours a day for people. And worldwide, people make like 5 hours a day. And if it gets over that, they can't feed themselves. Did any of those topics ever come up in that seminar you were in?
No, unfortunately not.
They didn't talk about just the absolute cost of food or a food shortage, etc.
Not that I can recall. Okay. It might have been in different sessions. Again, like what I mainly focused on was water and educational games.
What'd they say about educational gains? You didn't mention that. What's going on there or anything?
I talked about the FAL, which they don't call the FAL like they do here. They call it FAL. So I've taken to calling it FAL because I did that for a week. FAL, they have a game called AgroAdapt, which is like half board game, half virtual game. And it promotes collaboration between farmers, community leaders, and policymakers to find a solution for climate change, specifically within growing food in the midst of natural disasters. And then I also covered Minecraft. There's a NASEF, or NASEF, partnered with the State Department to create a modern version of Minecraft called Farmcraft, which has the goal of teaching students through Minecraft about new innovation in farming. Deep topics. I wrote that story last night on my couch.
Really?
So
it sounds like fascinating stuff. When people talk about, don't want to open up this can of worms, but I guess I will anyway. When people talk about climate change, and there's a certain lot of people that are foregone conclusion that not only is there climate change, but we caused it all. I was actually doing some research on hurricanes. After reading, I don't know how many articles about how, oh God, climate change. I went back, history of hurricanes since people have been writing about them. We had way more in the 19-teens and the 1920s than we have in the last 20 years. It's not even close. How many major hurricanes hit the U.S. in like from 1908 to 1930 than now?
Mm-hmm.
How does everybody? We just assume that every time it rains now, we did it. I mean, I don't know how you make that jump.
Well, I think that if you look at the case study of things like war, so like World War One and World War Two, they were not televised. Therefore, people in the United States had a hard time understanding what was happening until they saw video footage of the mass destruction of the Holocaust. Because I know a few years ago, like the Rhodes family went to Dachau, and they showed like a video of U.S. soldiers like reacting to the devastation of Dachau and what it did to people who suffered there. And I think that but then as we moved into Vietnam, things became more televised and more accessible, and people felt more closer to them. So like, yeah, like in like this, like, yeah, in the 60s when we were having these hurricanes, they weren't as televised. Therefore, people who lived in places like the Midwest or the West Coast did not feel as close to them compared to now, where they're definitely more televised. So I think that's part of it.
We also had some hit areas where nobody lived, where now somebody lives everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember them saying, well, God, there's this horrendous hurricane, but oh, by the way, it landed in a part of Texas where all they have is a few cows or some in Mexico, and we don't care about that. So maybe they would land other places. Now it just seems like they're heading for where your friends live, which is your buddy, Russell Fari, caused all this when he moved to the west coast of Florida. He said, we've never had a hurricane. How many? They had like three since he said that. Russell, you still there? We must have lost your dad. It's just you and me, Maggie.
No, I had muted myself. I had muted myself. I was just saying I can totally see Fari saying, I'm going to be safe. Yeah. I'm on the right side of Florida. They get hit on that other side.
Yeah, well, then they turned right around and went for him like three times.
So did Captain Tico survive?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
So, May, what would you like to see out of all the stuff you see in Washington? Do you see, you know, all of us have a feeling that it could be more, quote, efficient, and there's some duplication of effort and stuff. Do you necessarily see, like, all kinds of people not doing anything out there? I mean, I know it's a tough question, but I mean, I got to believe that there are some people in Washington that are actually pretty good at what they do. I mean, is it just totally a bureaucratic mess where nobody does anything? I can't believe that that's the case. Or there's got to be some pretty good people out there that are in government. Do you see, like, you know, I can't even ask this question, Russell. Can you see the lack of any sort of, you know, whatever you want to call it, useless bureaucracy? Like, everybody in the country seems to think that everybody there doesn't do anything. I mean, I don't know if I can believe that. What do you think? You're closer to it than I ever have been.
I honestly have no idea. I don't really know people that work in the bureaucracy. I know more people that work in the media than the actual government.
You've got a Congress pass, right? Did people
that was a one-day pass.
Oh, okay. Well, now, are people in Congress seemingly... I mean, does no Democrat ever go out with a Republican for a beer, or is it that bad, or mm-hmm. I mean, or a Coke or a coffee? I mean, is it that bad? Is it that at that level? Is it as divisive as seems to be? The rest of the country seems to think it is.
I honestly have no idea. Again, I mainly know media people. I don't really know. Again, I'm not really involved with them, like, political campaign teams or the halls of Congress, because again, like, I'm not a campaign manager. I'm not interested in doing comms for politics. Well, I'm more interested in doing media.
Do the Fox News people hang out with the MSNBC people?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. This was, I'm stepping on Maggie's toes a bit. But one of the things, you know, when I started talking to people in media, et cetera, and saying my daughter's going into it, and, you know, do you have any advice? What about, you know, what are good places to work? What are bad places to work? There's really, you know, especially at Maggie's level where she's pretty junior, it's not like if she goes to work at Fox for a year or two that the people at CNN would never hire her. A lot of the behind the scenes people will move from one to the other, kind of seamlessly along the, you know, from the different networks, and it doesn't really matter where they are along the political spectrum. That's not true of the people in front of the camera, but a lot of the people behind the camera move all over the place. So
you mean
there's a lot more interaction than you would think behind the scenes among the media, from what I've gathered from listening to Maggie.
If you look at Caitlin Collins from 2014 to 2017, she worked at the Daily Caller, which is definitely right-leaning, but now since 2017 she's worked at CNN. So,
well,
that's just an example.
Well, didn't Maria Bartiromo went from CNBC to Fox, right?
CNBC to
Fox Business.
Yeah, didn't the other one too? What's her name? The redhead.
Liz Claman.
Liz Claman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett's favorite interviewer.
Oh God, yeah. When she seems so out of place over there because she went to Berkeley, right?
Yeah,
I think she did. What do you do? What are you gonna do when you graduate? It seems like you really like what you're doing. I mean, you don't want to stay in school forever. You talking about a graduate degree, maybe?
No, I'm not going to do a graduate degree. Well,
I want her to do a graduate degree.
I have my master plan, but I keep it to myself because I don't want to say, oh, I want to work for X company. Then someone else from Y company hears this and goes, okay, then why are we going to hire her for an internship or for a job? So yeah, I do have like my master plan, but like I keep that to myself. For now, I will just say that my dream is to work for a Weekend Update on SNL. And
wow, well, that'd be cool.
Move on to
one of the people that I hang with is an attorney, and his daughters all went to school out there like you. Well, they all went the one that's fascinating is one of the girls went to Fordham Law School. And I would never have guessed, but Fordham is like, Russell, I think it's like one of the toughest law schools to get in, and virtually everybody there either clerked for a Supreme Court person or a congressperson or something during the summer. I would never have guessed. I mean, I knew Fordham. The only thing I knew about Fordham is that's where Digger Phelps came from, the Notre Dame basketball coach. But evidently, some of these places really have inroads into Washington and stuff, places you would never guess. I guess I would have thought all the Ivy Leagues, but... but some of them, they pretty interesting story. She became a real good friend of Lyndon Johnson's wife, Lady Bird. Became a big friend of Lady
Bird.
She went to the wedding because one of the kids was her grandkids was her classmate or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the amount of contacts some of these schools. I mean just listening to Maggie. It's totally different than when I went to school. I mean, we just went to class, played basketball, did our homework, went to the bar.
Well, that's kind of what most people do. I just happen to be in a city, and I happen to want to take advantage of the things that are provided to me here through hard work.
Well, that's what I mean. It's fascinating.
There's a lot of people at UW who think they're entitled to a lot of things and actually won't put in the hard work. But I'm actually someone who puts in the hard work and actually wants to do these things. So.
But your campus, unlike... Notre Dame in South Bend, where you never really went off campus unless you went to a bar, your campus is really the whole city. It's kind of like DePaul on steroids.
Yeah, but people don't leave campus. It's like the most insane thing.
Really?
Like I was with
you do.
Yeah,
you
I,
do.
I was with Mother Rhodes in she came. I had an endoscopy about a month ago, and she came, and we were like in DuPont Circle, and like I was able to. I don't know. We were in like DuPont during Eastern Market, then we were like. I took her all over like the city, like we were by the mall, and she was like, and like I didn't need like a Google Maps, and she was like, wow, you really know like where you're going. Do other people like at your school know where they're going? Can they do stuff like this? So I was like, no. Like I was like I had a group project recently, and I was like, yeah, like UMD is like not that far, like let's go up and interview someone there. And they're like, oh well, that's like really far. And I'm like, okay, well how about let's interview someone at Howard, which you know is like across town. And they were like, no, I don't want to go interview someone at Howard because, like, that's, again, really far. And, like, we have to, like, get dressed up all nice for that interview. Like, it's stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Is Georgetown sort of like where you are? Those people are all involved, too? Or I want to say, you just said a lot of people aren't involved.
I don't know. I feel like people at Georgetown are more caught up in their own. I feel like a lot of college students, whether they be at like Howard, American, GW, Georgetown, Catholic, they kind of just like stick on their campuses. Like they don't really like go off and do anything. Like I knew only one other person who was interning first semester freshman year along with me, but like he's not even interning this semester.
I was gonna say, like, did you spend any time at home?
Like I'll be totally real. I'm the only person I know that most likely will be able to intern all 4 years of college. And that's just because, like, I went out of my way and I looked for opportunities and I try my best in everything I do and I'm not, like, a jerk and I'm not entitled. Like,
do you get to stay in a dorm or do you got to go get an apartment for the summer?
I'm in a dorm right now because GW requires students to live on campus for the first 2 years. But in May, like, an apartment will happen just simply because it's easier than moving every 4 to 8 months, and it's also cheaper, and I plan to be here.
Well, I guess my question should have been, during the summer when you're interning, do you get to stay in a dorm?
Yeah, you can stay in the dorm. And GMU students have priority registration for summer housing if they want to stay. But personally, like, if you're a GW student and you're planning on staying here over the summer, I just recommend you get an apartment. That's my hot take.
Well, aren't the apartments ridiculously high there, or no?
No, if you live like 10-15 minutes, if you live like 10-15, like, there's like one place I found that's like 10-15 minutes off campus in an area that I really like. That's rent controlled. You lease for a year, and then it's a renewable month by month lease. And I'm like, that's not that bad. Like, plus, like, the plus for DC students, you get free metro during the school year, so the commute doesn't even matter.
So you get a roommate or two, and off you go, or you go by yourself?
I'm gonna go by myself.
See, in South Bend, if you had a place off campus, you had to keep somebody there even during the holidays, or you get robbed every night. It was bad.
Yeah, well, this is DC, so.
Yeah, she's got one of the things that we love about where her campus is you have campus security,
oh,
DC
yeah, that's
police,
right.
Secret Service, State Department cops. They have like five police services that police groups that patrol around there. You're probably in one of the safest places in America.
Are you going to be able to swing tickets for your old man and me for like inaugural balls?
Oh yeah, that's coming up. I have to figure that out. I don't know. We'll see if I go to that. It depends. I might ask some of my friends.
What about us?
Talking about that.
What about us? We could go rent a tux.
I want to go to the White House. I asked her if she was allowed to take somebody to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and because she's involved in the National Press Club now, and she goes, well, you know, I'm not really dating anybody, so I'm not talking about who you're dating. I'm talking about me. And she hesitated a long time and has not decided whether she would be willing to let her dad go along for something.
Well, you
like
know, in
that.
Some societies, rich old guys go out with young girls.
Just yeah, we're, that's not.
We're
that's
just not,
not
one of those. We're not one of them, but there are some that do that.
I know.
You could be her date.
I know. I think she should take. I think she should take me to one of those things. I think she should take her mom to one of those things too.
I think she could explain away a professor father pretty easily as a date.
Yeah, yeah.
If she wanted to be seen with you, anyway.
Yeah, she's just sitting over there fuming right now. I can picture the look on her face.
Oh
yeah.
God.
No, I'm chilling.
We're talking about you, chick.
Yeah. I find this fascinating. I really do because I mean, your dad knows that I'm curious about everything, and I'm curious about somebody who's doing a totally different thing in college than I did. I don't know if I'd want to do it totally what you're doing, but I wouldn't do it the same way I did. I'd get out a little more.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that are like, oh, you're basically living like a young adult, but like personally for me, I don't really like going to my high school, and I didn't really like doing.
You're ready to be a grown up.
Yeah, I was when I was a senior in high school, I was kind of just ready to like. Yeah, be a grown up, do those sorts of things. Like, I have very, very intense dietary restrictions. It's my fatal flaw. So, like, I'm in charge of making all my own food. So, like I'm really, like, I'm not, I don't, like, go to the dining hall and, like, dump food in my basket. Like, I'm in charge of making all my own food. I do my laundry. I clean the apartment. Like I do, like, more of, like, the grown up typical things that a lot of other college students do.
Well, at some point, even if you're not a total grown up, you got to do your laundry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Turning things inside out doesn't work very well.
Anyway, it was fascinating to have you, and good luck. And obviously, I want to have you back. I mean, it's you know what? I'd love to have you back somewhere between the election and when we decide who's going to be president. That should be interesting. Wow. So, Russell, you're not here next week, which is always
I'm not here next.
Russell's
week.
One of my favorite fixes. I forgot to ask you about China, but we'll cover that in 2 weeks. I have a feeling if they keep having trouble. I don't know if we can count on them to show up for all these auctions, but I think I'm probably.
We can't. That's you know, that might be another thing that's contributing to the yields going up a little, you know, slowly but surely.
Well, because
they've really been buying gold more than they've been buying our bonds.
Well, gold's going up every day, which is fine. I mean, we've had the best run.
That's because they're preparing for World War III, because that's what you want to own during war.
Oh God! Oh God! So we have World War III on both sides of the globe. I don't want to do that.
Well, actually, I mean that's how World War II worked.
Yeah, I know. Oh well, Maggie, thank you. Russell, thank you. SP Futures now down 20. SP Futures down 90. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Thank you.
That's all, folks.